Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is a dear friend, Catherine Hand. Her website is catherinehand.com.au, and she is here to share her journey with you. It is a story of triumph over adversity, a story about making the right decisions in spite of all the pressures that this world has to offer, all the peer pressure, all the manipulation, all the archontic interference from all these institutions so many people hold so dearly. Catherine Hand is a person who is not just a survivor, and she's not just someone who has overcome adversity. She is an inspiration to me and many others, because Catherine will share her story of how she defeated cancer. And not only did she have to overcome the cancer, she had to overcome the medical system as well. And I'll let her tell you that story. So without any further ado, Catherine Hand, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Oh, thank you, James. It's beautiful to hear that introduction, and it's fantastic to be here. I'm so excited to talk to you today and to share my news and my wisdom that I've gained along the way with everybody listening. I know that you'll have an amazing audience listening, and they'll be really ready to hear this. So it's exciting to be here.
Well, start from the beginning, Catherine. Tell us what happened, and tell us what was going on in your life when, you know, you started to feel ill, and then you eventually got your diagnosis. So take us through that process.
Yeah, well, I wasn't feeling ill at all, and like a lot of women, there's no indication of breast cancer. I was at a great time in my life. I was in the middle of organizing the conferences, and I organized consciousness conferences in Australia, and we had a new one that was in the pipeline. We've got two going at Coffs Harbour, which you know about. You've spoken at quite a few of our events now, Close Encounters and the Afterlife Explorers. And then we had a new one coming up in Uluru called the Cosmic Consciousness Conference. And so together with my partner, Mick, we were in the middle of doing that. Life was going great. I was just thriving. And I actually had a really strange experience. I woke up in the middle of the night, and somewhere between that dream state and waking state, I had the sensation of a snake coming right at me. And I picked up a cleaver, and I just cut the snake into hundreds of tiny pieces. And I lay back down, I went back to sleep, and at the time I recall getting some really sharp stabbing pains in my breast, but not enough to keep me awake. I went back to sleep, and you know, to this day I don't really know what happened in that moment, but I think that was a moment where I had some sort of interference that resulted in me developing breast cancer. So I had forgotten about it the next morning, and it wasn't until I was getting out of the shower that I remembered that I'd had that sharp pain. And I had a look at my breast, and I saw a little bit of dimpling, and I thought, oh, that's not good. And so I felt, and sure enough, I felt a lump. And you know, I'm one of these people that sort of doesn't love going to the doctors, but Mick said to me, no, I think you should go get it checked out, just to be on the safe side. So with his coaxing, I did. I went in and went to the GP. She wanted to send me off immediately to go and have a mammogram. I knew enough about mammograms to know that they weren't good. I didn't know a lot about them, but I had heard that they weren't good to have for many reasons, so I wanted to avoid the mammogram. So my doctor said, okay, we'll go and have an ultrasound. So I went and had an ultrasound. I went into the the pathology clinic. I took my son with me. You know, he was 9 at the time, and I really didn't contemplate that it would be cancerous. I just thought, I'll make sure I'll get it checked out, make sure that it's okay, and you know, I can forget about it. So I thought, I'll duck into the pathology clinic, I'll get the ultrasound, and I'll be on my way. Well, it didn't turn out to be that way at all. I ended up having the ultrasound, and you know, that terrible feeling when the technician is looking and you can tell that there's something not quite right, and she called the doctor in, and they were sort of talking in, you know, quiet code language, and I really started to get a bit worried at that point. And I had to go out and wait, and the doctor then came in and told me that there was definitely some suspicious activity. It could be cancer, and they wanted me to have a mammogram. And so I sort of just got funneled into this process then, where I had a mammogram instantly. They then really bullied me, I would say, into having a fine needle biopsy, and then immediately after that a core biopsy, which was really, really painful. And now, knowing what I know about core biopsies, I never would have had one if I'd had a little bit more time and knew more about it. But very quickly I was already in a place of fear and sheer terror. And the way that they spoke to me, it was as if I was going to die, you know. And that wasn't even coming from a doctor who was giving me a diagnosis. That was just picking up on the language and reading in between the lines of what they were saying to me in there. So, you know, my poor son, 3 hours that whole process took. He was sitting in there waiting for me. And I went out of that pathology clinic just sort of traumatized and shaken totally to my core, and knowing and, you know, expecting that obviously they wouldn't have put me through all of that if it wasn't suspected cancer. So I went home that day just feeling really scared about what was to come. So that was sort of how it all kicked off.
How long did it take for you to get a diagnosis, what they thought was going on with you?
I can't remember entirely. That whole period of time seems like a real blur now, but it all unfolded pretty rapidly. You know, I think within probably a few days I was back in my GP's office, and she told me that that there was a series of lumps in my breast. The largest was 2.5 centimetres, and I had a whole cluster of other smaller ones around it. And even so, it wasn't clear from her language that she used with me that day whether it was cancerous. So I did start to feel that maybe it would just be a benign lump and I could have it removed. I still really was sort of unsure about where I was, but she didn't use the word cancer herself. So I went along a few days later to the Royal North Shore Hospital here in Sydney and went in to see the oncologist, and not prepared for her to then turn around and say to me, you've got invasive lobular carcinoma. And I didn't even know what that meant. I had to get her to clarify, well, does that mean it's cancer? And she said, yeah, it is. So that, you know, that sort of vague, surreal feeling of just shock, you know, sort of has blurred a lot for me. You know, all I remember about that day is just walking out of the hospital, and she wanted me to go and have a whole, you know, sort of series of other tests and scans straight after that appointment with her that day. And she sent me out of the hospital, and I was just shell-shocked. It was sort of like really surreal. I was in my own little bubble of just fear, and it was like the world outside that bubble, everyone around me was just in slow motion, and I could see all these people talking and walking, and I was just dazed and walking around really vaguely, and my brain sort of just went offline, and I couldn't find the clinic that I had to go and have these further tests. And some perceptive soul must have seen me looking really dazed and confused and came and said to me, "Are you okay? Do you need some help?" And she pointed me in the direction of the clinic. But that day just seems to be a real blur now. I don't remember a lot of it. So it was pretty shocking. I think it's the words that you really don't want to hear is that you've got cancer. And when you hear them, it just sideswipes you. So that was when I discovered that it was cancer. And it turned out that invasive lobular cancer, I didn't do a whole lot of research on it because I didn't want to keep putting myself back into a place of fear, but it's a more rare type of breast cancer. Only 10% of breast cancer types is this particular type, and they call it invasive because it can very easily spread into your breast tissue and into your lymph nodes, and so it's a more aggressive form of cancer. So yeah, it wasn't the best news to get that day.
A lot of times they give cancer grades or levels, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, grade 4. Did they give a grade for this type of cancer?
Yeah, I think so. I have heard that they don't do that so often in Australia now. And I'm trying to think that I think they did give it a grade 2 based on the size of the tumour. But I'm not 100% about that. I'd have to go back and look at the paperwork. But I'm pretty sure that somewhere along the line I read that it was grade 2. So yeah, I don't really know what that means, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and how soon after they told you this and after you went through more of the scans, got the results back, did they have like a sit down with you, and did they give you any advice on how to deal with your family, what to tell them, or if you should keep it to yourself for the time being? How did that work?
Oh, okay. Well, this was the really interesting bit. And, I'm a hypnotherapist, and I've been practicing as a hypnotherapist for 10 years. I do hypnotherapy and EFT. So I have a really good idea, perhaps more than most people, of the mind-body connection. And I really believe that most of our diseases, or all of our disease, begins with an emotional wound. And so I'm a great believer in trying to work out the emotional root of all disease. But when it's something as big as cancer and it's happening to me, I forgot my training. I forgot my beliefs in a way. I got temporarily corralled into the whole machine of medical lingo and fear and all of that type of thing. And so I kept going along. I went to after there was a week, that first week after my initial appointment, where I went and had MRI scans and CT scans and more ultrasounds and every kind of test. I didn't know what was going on half the time, but just like a sheep, I just kept doing what I was told to do because I didn't know any different. And so when I came back to have that second meeting with my oncologist, and there's a guy that I've come to follow called Dr. Robert Morse, and Dr. Morse has said in one of his podcasts that I've listened to that female oncologists are the coldest human beings on earth. And I've only dealt with one, but she totally fitted that description. She was, a lot of these oncologists that I call terrorists, I call oncologists terrorists now because they use exactly the same tactics. She was very cold. A lot of these doctors, they're very, very academically intelligent, and I think they're a little bit sort of, you know, Asperger-ish. They've got very little empathy, and certainly this woman had no empathy whatsoever. And when I came back to see her and she got all the battalion of test results back, and she just said to me, well, you know, this is what we're dealing with. You need to have a double mastectomy. We'll put you through a course of radiation, and chemotherapy doesn't really work on this type of cancer, but we'll give it to you just in case. Yeah. And I was just sitting there totally bewildered, and you know, as I'm starting to process the fact that I'm going to have both of my breasts removed, I had tears just streaming down my face, and she didn't even look at me. She was on the phone to the surgeon trying to get me booked in to have the operation for a double mastectomy, and without any discussion, you know, what amazed me was that she didn't want to know what's my history, what's my diet like, you know, what's my stress levels. There was nothing. There was, you know, she knew nothing about me apart from these tests that she had in front of her, and that was enough for her to go and order me to have both of my breasts removed. You know, it was just frightening and totally overwhelming, and I just sat there in a flood of tears. And when she got off the phone and after booking me in, I was just trying to madly stall for time. And I actually had a cruise coming up. It was just before my 50th birthday. And so I had booked in, you know, all year long I'd been paying off this cruise. I was going on a cruise with a couple of girlfriends, and we were all turning 50, and we were going to go off on this week-long cruise and have a great girly time. And it coincided with this whole drama that was unfolding. And so I said to her, look, I'm going on a cruise, and, you know, I've got to go on this cruise, and I've got a girlfriend coming from Melbourne, I've got another one coming from Brisbane, you know, can I put it off until after the cruise? And if anything, I was just trying to buy myself some time to think and look into other options. And, you know, at that point I knew that cannabis was an option, but I didn't know that much about it. And when I suggested that I wait until after the cruise, she just looked down at her notes and she just looked up at me and she said, and so how old is your son? And I said, 9. And she said, and you're prepared to risk your life and go on a cruise. And, you know, it just made me feel like I was the world's worst mother, you know, for putting my life on the line and, you know, and now I look back on it and I think it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, it's taken years for that tumor to get to that size, and so I don't understand why they want to rush you into having these barbaric operations to remove your breasts. So yeah, it was pretty horrific, and just her lack of empathy. And so I did, all of a sudden there I was sitting in an office in the space of a few minutes, had to agree to having my breasts removed, and and so that was about, I think I then had about a week. I had to cancel my cruise, and I had a week to start to prepare myself.
And just to reiterate, folks, this was a grade 2 cancer, not a grade 3, not a grade 4, but a grade 2, and they wanted to lop both your breasts off.
Yeah, yeah, and the reason being that this is a, you know, supposedly a more, you know, aggressive type of cancer that will easily spread through both breasts, and, you know, and so she felt that she was doing me a favor by taking both of them off, because she said if I waited within a year, it would have spread to the other breast and I'd have to have a mastectomy then in any case. And, you know, of course, now I look back and realize that the reason why they rush you into it is because if you go away and start to find alternatives, you won't go and do it. So they, you know, it's just like the used car salesman who does not want you to leave that lot without buying a car. You know, he's going to use every tactic, every trick up his sleeve to get you to buy that old lemon before you walk out. Otherwise, you'll discover it's a lemon and you'll find a better deal somewhere. So this is exactly what they do. They get you in there. They tell you that you're going to die, and just use fear and terror to get you to submit. And I did it. I was, you know, I was like so many other women that just think there's no other option, despite all my training, despite my knowledge of knowing that there's such a strong mind-body connection and we've got the potential to heal ourselves. I still went down that path of fear and terror. And so in a way, I was desperately upset. You know, it sounds crazy, but I was so upset to lose my cruise, because there was a part in me thinking, well, if this is what's got to happen, I may as well just go and live it up for a week and have a great time and eat, drink and be merry. And but in a way, it turned out to be the best thing that I ever did in cancelling, because in that week, I just literally lived and breathed cancer research. And Mick had actually bought the Truth About Cancer series on DVD, and of course I'd never watched it. We'd never watched it. We kind of, you know, you think that you'll escape it and never have to, or hope that you'll never have to deal with it. So I actually had the DVD series sitting there. So I started watching it, and that was what turned a corner for me. I sat there watching The Truth About Cancer and all the people that had healed alternatively. You know, Mick and I literally, I think, day and night for every day that week, just sat there talking it out, the pros and the cons of everything. And, you know, I had to go through that horrible thing that, as a woman, losing your femininity and thinking, you know, is Mick going to want to stick around if I don't have my breasts? And I discovered that, you know, not only do you lose your breasts, you lose your nipples. I don't know what I thought. I don't know what I thought would happen. But, you know, when I discovered that you lose your nipples as well, and it was just getting more and more horrible. It was like a horror story that just kept getting worse and worse. And I went and saw the surgeon. By that stage, I had found out that implants, you know, were not a great option either. And then I thought, well, if you're going to have implants without a nipple, you know, it's going to look pretty weird anyway. But I had found out in some of my research that implants can cause a whole host of other problems, which of course makes sense, having, you know, a foreign object in your body. But amongst those terrible things, it can actually cause uterine cancer. And one figure suggested that it was 1 in 3,000 women end up with uterine cancer from breast implants. And so when I was seeing the surgeon and talking about the options and what he could do, and he was running through everything, I said to him, you know, I've read that uterine cancer can be caused by implants. And he said, oh, it's pretty low. And I said, well, how low? And he said, oh, you know, about 1 in 3,000. And I thought, well, that doesn't seem low to me. If you're the 1 in 3,000 that ends up with uterine cancer, so yeah, their tactics are pretty scary, what they do. And of course, then once you're in a state of fear, your body's becoming so much more acidic, and it's actually, you know, this is why often cancer supposedly turns aggressive once you find out, once you get the diagnosis and you get that diagnosis shock. It can actually cause secondary cancer. And this is why that, you know, once people find out that they've got cancer, all of a sudden it can seemingly spread. It's actually not spreading. It's just that you're getting secondary cancers from the fear that you're under, because you think you're going to die, you think you're going to be separated from your children. You know, you might think that you're going to not be able to eat, or you know, there's so many other fears that then can come up once you get that initial diagnosis.
Well, the mind is a powerful thing, folks, and I've known of cases where people literally make themselves ill through negative thoughts, through negative thought loops. And for those of you who've heard the interviews with Jerry Marzinski and Sherry Sweeney, you know, there's a supernatural component to that as well. Listening to you tell your story, and we're just getting started here because it's a compelling, poignant story. I can't help but feel, Catherine, that, you know, you walked right into an archontic minefield where people that appear to be doctors, they appear to be medical professionals, they're like empty, hollow shells, and there's something in there, in these people, that are always pushing for these really extreme treatments. Now, for example, this oncologist lady told you straight up that chemotherapy for that particular cancer is basically ineffective, yet she was going to prescribe it to you anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what I'd like to know at this point is, okay, you went through that period of self-study. Thankfully, Mick, higher self, kicked in. He went and got the whole series, The Truth About Cancer. You happened to have it at just the right time, and you watched it, and you realized, wait a minute, I've got alternatives. I've got options. And all a winner needs to know, folks, is that another winner did it first. So you're watching these testimonies of other people who've beat cancer, and they did it their own way. Now, how did the medical professionals, quote unquote, react when you told them, eh? Because remember, folks, you were already booked for a double mastectomy, were you not?
Oh, I know. Well, it was really right up until the day before, I was still wavering. I was still thinking, what am I going to do? Can I do this? And it literally got to the day before, and then I opened up a letter that I got from the hospital, and I opened it up, and it was informing me about the procedure that they would do prior to the surgery to scan my lymphatic system. And when I was reading through, I wish I'd kept the letter. I've thrown out so much of the anything to do with that whole dark, you know, chapter of my life. I've actually just thrown it out because I don't want the energy of it. But in some ways now, I wish I'd kept the letter, because when I was reading through this procedure of what they were going to do before I had to have the surgery, I had to, you know, turn up at the radiation department, and they were going to inject me. It sounded like some horrible, you know, B-grade thriller from the 50s where they were going to do all these terrible things. And I was reading through it going, I can't do this. And then every time I thought about just walking into the hospital and sort of voluntarily saying, you know, yep, here I am, cut off my boobs, I just couldn't do it. And it got to the night, the afternoon before, and it was literally as if every cell in my body was screaming at me, just don't do it. No, no, no. And I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I knew that I just couldn't. I had to make that leap of faith and just trust my body's wisdom. And so once I was too scared to ring and say that I wasn't going. And so I called my sister, who's pretty tough. She's a bit of a tough nut. and I said, can you ring and cancel it for me? So she did. She was so brave. And I got about four or five phone calls from the oncologist, from her secretary, and I just ignored them all. But they were really putting the pressure on me. And the relief that flooded into my body once I knew that I didn't have to go in and do it, and it was enormous. And I just knew that I had done the right thing. And from that point on, I just didn't look back. I just thought, okay, that's not an option for me now. I never want to go back. I don't want to ever walk back into that hospital. I never want to see that oncologist again. And I did. I said to Mick a couple of times, it is like a reptilian pit in that place, and I don't want to have anything to do with it. And it just felt so good to be able to turn my back on it and just put that all behind me and look forward, you know, just look forward. And then it just sent me on, you know, down the rabbit hole of natural healing. And I think I've tried everything now.
And prior to this point, Catherine, correct me if I'm wrong, you were not what some would consider to be a naturopath type of person. You were not really in that field yet.
No, not at all. And this is, you know, this is why I really want to tell any woman that gets diagnosed with breast cancer, like, you do not need to. I'm just a normal person who, you know, I tried to be healthy, but, you know, I wasn't really, really healthy. I was pretty clueless when it came to really good, clean, natural health. I really had not gone down the path of you know, naturopathy or anything like that. So I had so much to learn about detoxing and about natural health and about the body, and obviously lots and lots of emotional work to do. And I've seen people who have done the right things physically and they've still died because they haven't done the emotional work and the energetic work. And I believe that is so important, is more important than the physical in some ways. So yeah, it did. It really sent me down into the rabbit hole of natural healing, and I had a lot of fear come up. In fact, there was one time that a friend of mine suggested that I call I don't know what she'd call herself. She was a coach, I suppose, to help people who got a cancer diagnosis, and I thought that she was going to be fully all about natural healing. That was the impression that I got about her. And up until this point, and I might have been about 4 months in my journey at that point when I rang her, I hadn't really considered that I could die. I really just thought that this was something that I would have to get through, and it would be a challenge, and that I would come out of it. And I think that even if I thought that I was having a mastectomy, I still thought that I'd survive it. I just thought that I'd survive it badly because I'd be losing my breasts, and I didn't know how I would cope with that. And I didn't cope that whole aspect of my femininity being taken away. So I hadn't considered death at all, no matter what path I went down. But about four months into the journey, I rang a lady who, she started asking me about my diagnosis, the type of cancer, when was I diagnosed, and all that sort of thing. And she said to me, well, she said, I strongly recommend that you go and do what the doctor says and have the mastectomy, and you might buy yourself 5 years. And if you don't want to do that, I suggest that you hang up, write your son and your partner a letter and tell them the things that you want to say to them and say goodbye. Write out your, make sure your will's up to date and plan your funeral. And it just crushed me. It was worse than getting the diagnosis in many ways, because she was really giving me my death sentence and telling me that best case scenario, I had 5 years if I had a mastectomy, and you know, I could drop dead any minute now if I didn't. So it was a really confronting phone call. And
And what was this person's title? Were they like a life coach or something?
Yeah, she was some sort of cancer coach. And I found the organization that she works for, that is apparently their style. They're very, very confronting. And I believe that their mindset is that they want to prepare you for the worst so that you've dealt with all scenarios, and then it can only get up, you can only get better from there. But you know, that's not my approach at all. You know, it was really shocking to me. It threw me into a really dark down place, and that sent me into a really dark patch of my healing journey, what I call the dark winter of my journey, because it really, really put the fear into me that I might actually die and leave my son and leave Mick, and it wasn't something that I wanted to face at all. So that was a really dark patch during my healing, and I realized the importance from going through that myself in staying positive, because it doesn't do you any good to dwell in the what ifs, because we all know that anything can happen. And you know, as I've said to many, many people, if it was my time to go, I would go. And whether it was cancer that takes me out, or whether it's, you know, a bus as I walk across the road, if it's my time to go and my contract is over, I will go home. So, yeah, that was a really big lesson for me, that you have to, it's vital if you decide to go down the natural healing path. And I hope that I encourage so many women to do that now. But it's so vital, if you do, to make sure that you surround yourself with a team of people who are totally committed to natural healing and totally believe that natural healing is the way to go. And I just did not, from that point on, I did not deal with anybody who still suggested that I do some sort of integrative medicine. And a lot of people said to me, you know, light workers and healers and naturopaths even would say, why don't you do both? Have the mastectomy, remove the cancer, remove the tumor, and then go really healthy and then do all your natural healing. And thank God I didn't even listen to them. And now that's, if there's any message that I can give to people, is pick your team and pick your friends.
Yes, yes.
Around you really well, because you don't want anyone's negativity, because you can feel it. I could practically feel people's fear when they were talking to me. And I've lost a lot of friends along the way. You know, one of my really good friends has totally just, you know, factored herself out of my life once I went down the natural healing path. And that was really hard for me. But you know, she just couldn't accept my decision and thought that I was making the wrong decision, and she just preferred not to be around me. So, you know, you just have to be around people who support you 100% of the way.
And there's a lot of misunderstanding about the concept of remission. All remission means, folks, is the cancer is still present. It just hasn't expanded and hasn't grown. It's not that the cancer has gone away. When you hear people having, you know, oh, we're going to have a party, I'm going to have a hallelujah breakdown because the cancer is in remission, it doesn't mean the cancer is not present in the body. See, what these allopathic types do is they browbeat people into submission. They will do interventions, kind of like, you know, like an addict, where they're going to get all the family members together in a small room, and then they're all going to gang up on the person who is kind of wavering whether or not they want to go down the allopathic chemo, radiation, double mastectomy route in our example. And they have the family members, you know, cry and plead and cajole and threaten the person. And, you know, that's the last thing the person needs. As Catherine pointed out, what they need is upliftment. What they need is encouragement. What they need is belief. And instead, what they get hammered with constantly is fear, fear, and more fear. They play on the fear and the self-doubt and the misgivings. And it's all based on lack of knowledge, folks. It's all based on ignorance, quite frankly, of the different modalities, the different options one has. because if you look at the success rate of the allopathic medical route, it's like they just kill people faster. That's all they do. All they do is, okay, we're plugging you into our system, and then they just die with very little chance. And I say this from the position of watching very close friends of mine and other people I've known quite well who took the allopathic route. Catherine stuck to her guns, folks. Now, I'm going to let you say it, Catherine. You're not in remission. You are. You take it from here.
Totally no evidence of cancer.
And this was through, what was it, a PET scan?
No. I would not have a PET scan.
Good on you.
I would not do any more of those types of conventional scans. I went and had a I went up to Brisbane and I had it's called a non-linear bioresonance scanning machine, and it's not really new technology. It is Russian technology, but it's new to Australia. In Germany, they use it in hospitals, but you know, Germany's a lot more advanced in terms of its cancer treatment than we are. I mean, our treatment's just barbaric, you know, it's so backwards.
It is.
But, you know, the whole allopathic approach to cancer is just so, it's so wrong. And I it's criminal. I long for the day when chemotherapy is outlawed. And, you know, really, when you think about it, I got to the point where the whole world feels so upside down. You find out that you've got cancer. So cancer is essentially just your body's way of telling you that you're over toxic. And so you've got these extra cells creating, you know, a safe place to store the toxins. So cancer's saving you. Cancer is the body's wisdom kicking in and saying, okay, you've got too much toxicity. We need to do something about it, and you know, we're going to keep creating extra cells to help your body, you know, store the toxins. So when you get this, you know, it's like the mechanic when you take your car to the mechanic, and you've got the warning light on your dashboard, and the mechanic says, "Okay, let's cut out the warning sign and everything will be fine." You know, that's what cutting out the cancer is like. So you're cutting out the warning system that your body's saying, hey, you're over toxic. And of course, with everything that's going on in our world now, we've got the, you know, the fluoride, the chemtrails, the you know, all the pesticides in the food, the GMO food, the EMF, we're just bombarded with all this toxicity. And of course, our bodies just can't cope. So cancer is a blessing. You know, cancer, I don't use all that traditional language that so many people use when they're talking about fighting cancer, beating cancer, battling cancer. Cancer has been my friend. And I think that there have been many times when I have wished that I didn't have to deal with it, because the fear has been quite overwhelming at times. But most of the time, it's been a blessing in so many ways. It's got me so healthy. I'm so healthy, and everyone that comes to see me, you know, I think that the funniest time, the first time I realized what people are expecting and what I'm showing them is so opposed, so at opposite ends of the scale. I had one of my girlfriends come over to visit, and she turned up with a big bunch of flowers and a get well card, and I opened up the door and she just went, "Oh my God, you look amazing." And she turned up and she felt silly having a get well card, and because she had imagined that I'd be lying in bed and my hair would be falling out. And I said, "No, that only happens because of the chemo." So, you know, if you get a cancer diagnosis and then someone comes and wants to inject more toxins into you, and radiation and cut off the tumor that's actually saving you, it's so backwards, it doesn't make sense. You know, you may as well plug yourself up to battery acid because it's the same pH level as battery acid. Chemotherapy and battery acid are about the same pH level. So you're turning your body more acidic, more toxic, and then they want to radiate you, and then they want to cut off the tumor, and the tumor is the thing that's actually saving you. So none of it, not one bit of conventional treatment for cancer actually makes sense, and it's criminal in my mind.
Everything is backwards. Everything is an inversion of the truth. There's not an oncologist on the planet who can talk knowledgeably about the importance of nutrition and diet. They don't know what the lactose cycle is. I mean, in cancer wards all over the Western world, cancer patients are being fed Jell-O, ice cream, junk food. It's just perpetuating the lactose cycle, but they don't even know the basics. So you're dealing with very dangerous people when you're looking at it from a health standpoint.
And
the arrogance of these people, where they just, because of the dogmatic program they've been subjected to, they think that they can just browbeat somebody, and they're quite successful at this because, quite frankly, they're trained in it, and the system promotes those with a narcissistic kind of bent. So those people that have this narcissistic, know-it-all, holier-than-thou attitude, those are the ones that wind up becoming doctors and whatnot. And I contrast what's happened with you, Catherine, because you stuck to your guns, because you had a belief in yourself and you had a belief in your own destiny. And I contrast it with those I know who took the allopathic route, and just one gal in particular, a close friend of mine, double mass, they lopped off her breast, and the cancer exploded. It went into her bones. She became very frail, very sick, and whatever she would bring up, an alternative means of healing to her oncologist, the oncologist would always knock it back. No, 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 don't do that. No, 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 no. And he had her in a state of perpetual fear. She asked him, well, when can I stop the chemotherapy? He said straight up, you're going to be on chemo until the day you die. And folks, chemotherapy was literally created by somebody, an army, U.S. Army officer who specialized in chemical warfare in World War I. So the whole concept of chemotherapy, the idea behind it was created by a guy who used chemicals to kill people with, right? Mm-hmm. So now, and because of this weird inversion of everything on this planet, the thing that's been used as a weapon of mass destruction somehow magically with a wave of the wand now is supposed to heal people. And I've had oncologists look me in the eye and they tell me I would never, never use chemotherapy on myself or my family.
Yeah. Okay?
Privately, some of them, those with integrity, will tell you that. I would never do it on myself. I would never do it with any of my family. And when you look at how the media portrays and the cinema and TV, they make all these cancer patients that have been hammered by the allopathic system, they make them look like heroes. You know, they have shows like The Good Doctor, you know, this autistic boy who becomes like a savant and stuff. And then you have all these people, everyone in so many TV shows, not everyone, but a lot of people, a lot of characters, they're cancer victims, because what it's doing, it's mirroring the you know, the plight of so many people in society who are down with cancer, and they make it seem as if there's an inevitability to it, Catherine, where there's no other outcome. You either go our way and do things our way, or you will die. But the fact of the matter is, their way almost invariably leads to death.
Mm. Well, do you know what, James? I mean, I think what I've learned along this way is I'm so in awe of the human body. Our bodies are amazing. And I think it's incredible. A lot of people have said to me, oh, it's a miracle. You know, it's a miracle that, you know, I put up a post on Facebook and I said, you know, I've just got these great results and there's no evidence of cancer and I've done it this way. And it was unbelievable. It went off. Like, you know, I had over 700 likes. I had about 400 comments. And a lot of people in that post and in life have been saying to me, oh, it's a miracle, you know, such a blessing and it's a miracle. And I don't think it's a miracle that I have survived cancer. I think what's a miracle is that anyone survives chemo. And that shows me, that's a testament to the human body that it can survive anything, because the fact that anyone lives through chemo amazes me, because as you say, it is a weapon of death. It's designed to kill. That's what it goes into your body to do, and it kills everything. So the fact that there's anyone still around that survives cancer, that survives chemo, is amazing. But you know, they're even the way that they measure success. If you survive chemotherapy for 5 years, you are considered a success story. Typically, the cancer will not come back, because technically it doesn't come back, but that they will become aware of further cancer in their body about 7 or 8 years later. But then the medical profession thinks that that's a new cancer, but in actual fact it's probably the cancer that they have caused by pumping them with chemo and giving them radiation. So, you know, it's even their success stories and everything like that are really skewed. So
yes, it is. And you look at the incidence of childhood cancer, you look at the incidence, the pervasive incidence of cancer throughout society, and it's no coincidence. And a lot of people that have done the research in this, there's a lot of scholarly works about this very subject of the SV40, simian 40 virus that was put into the polio vaccine. That's just one example, which led to generations of cancers in so many people. What they found, Catherine, in the old days was when a person passed away, they would do an autopsy on the person, and often as not, they would find cancer in the body. But these people lived to a ripe old age. They died of something other than cancer, because typically, as you pointed out, what the tumors do, unless they're like a really hardcore, vicious type of cancer, what tumors typically do is they encapsulate the problem. They close it off. They seal it off. They will create enough cells in order to wall it off from the rest of the body. And what should be going on is, and there are so many natural ways of doing this too, there should be an effort to create what's known as apoptosis, where there's a natural triggering mechanism within cells that are anaerobic or on the verge of anaerobic, i.e. cancerous, where a trigger mechanism occurs which causes the cancerous cells to die naturally without replicating. Now, there's a way to do that in a healing modality, but what they do with the chemo is bass-ackwards opposite. They hammer the entire body chemistry, the entire bloodstream, all the organs with hardcore chemicals, which causes this mega inflammatory reaction. It just makes the body scream from the inside out. So everything is bass-ackwards. Everything is an inversion. Instead of doing something to make the cells die naturally like they're programmed to do and not replicate in an out-of-control fashion, they do things to make the situation worse. So, you know, we've got a lot to talk about. We're just getting started here. Catherine's going to be talking more in this in the members segment about what she did to become cancer-free. And again, I really want people to pay attention to Catherine's story, because there are so many people out there that knuckle under to the browbeating and the abuse of these terrorists who call themselves doctors and oncologists. And then they shame and they guilt the people. Oh, like what they did to you, Catherine. Oh, do you really want to do that to your boy? Do you really want to leave your boy to be an orphan, right? And then, you know, they wind up killing the patient anyway. And then they just, you know, wipe their hands figuratively and literally and say, next, next, next. Because the toxicity in our system, like you pointed out, with the chemtrails, with everything that's going on, there's going to be a never-ending shortage of a never-ending supply, rather, of all these people being plugged into the system. And what Catherine is talking about is, and she's walked the walk, she's been diagnosed with cancer, and now she's cancer-free. Okay, she's not a conspiracy theory. She has actually done it, folks. And so, you know, in the time you've got left, Catherine, I'd like you to talk specifically to the women in the audience and tell them, you know, your thought process is going through, encapsulate that and say, look, this is what you need to do to get your head straight and to get your heart straight when you deal with this issue. Because you pointed out earlier, and I thought it was key, you got to eliminate the negative influences in your life, the negative people, the naysayers. Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'd love to, because it's really riding on the back of what you just said, actually, and talking about the number of people that are autopsied and found to have tumors, and saying that they are. I read one paper where they were saying that something like 40% of women autopsied have tumors in their breasts, and they have died of old age or some other reason, you know, that it's not because of breast cancer that they've died. And so there's a natural thing that occurs, and I've discovered this by reading a lot on German New Medicine, that in women, when we have a trauma, particularly if it's related to our children, the body will naturally want to create more milk. So we'll have this lactating response, because it's nurturing. If we see our child go through some sort of trauma, we want to help them. And so the body is designed to produce milk. Now, if we're not actually of, you know, that age where, or we don't have a child that's breastfeeding, that would just result in a whole lot of cells being created, but it's going through the same sort of response of wanting to nurture. And so, interestingly, if you're a right-handed woman and you see your child get hurt, you will end up getting breast cancer in the left breast. And so this natural occurrence, this natural process occurs where your body will create the tumor. There'll be a resolution that, you know, in my case, it happened with my son. I saw his finger get chopped off. So I had a natural resolution. The tumor will start to break down. Now, if your body can't break the tumor down for whatever reason, because you don't have enough of the bacteria in your body to actually break the tumor down, the body, as you said, will just encapsulate it. And so just like a foreign object in your body, it will just deal with it by encapsulating, putting this hard tissue around it to protect your body from it, and you go on. So I think that the problem is that there's this whole thing of early detection is actually just causing all the problems. In a way, there was a doctor that said, and now his name escapes me, but he said, you're better to do nothing than go through conventional treatment, because again, your body's designed to heal. Your body is so wise. And so for women who get a cancer diagnosis of breast cancer, I would encourage them to, first of all, look into German New Medicine and understand the mechanics of what our body's doing to help us heal, and know that it will heal. It's designed to heal. And there's really not a lot that you have to do apart from you know, detox, get your body in as good a state as it can, and work on your emotional factors. Find out what caused the cancer, what triggered that emotional response in your body that caused a tumor to appear in the first place. And most of all, just take time out. You know, as my naturopath said to me, it took 8 years for the tumor to get to be that size. It's not going to you know, all of a sudden go crazy, you know, rampaging through your body. So take the time to do your research and be really, really educated. And then you can make your decision from a place of knowledge, not from a place of fear. So that's my message to just... And in the meantime, just start to clean up your act anyway. You know, go organic. Don't eat all the food with the pesticides and the BPA, all these estrogen mimicking pesticides, and the BPA cause too much of an estrogen response in our body, and that's not good for our breast health. Make sure that you've got iodine in your diet. They've stripped the iodine out of our so much of our foods and all of the minerals. So, you know, be healthy, go organic, get EMF protection, get the fluoride out of your water. You know, don't wear a bra, you know, if wear a bra minimally when you really have to, but the rest of the time just wear, you know, crop tops or preferably nothing. You just want your lymphatic system to be really free flowing and not constrained. You know, obviously cut out deodorant that's got aluminium. You know, just all of those sorts of things will just prevent it from even occurring. But if you do feel a lump, just know that there's a reason for it, and your body's working for you, not against you. And your body is so wise, it knows what to do, so you don't have to go into fear.
Absolutely. Well, we're just getting started, and we've got a whole other segment to go. Catherine Hand, do you want to let the listeners know what your website is again?
It's easy. It's catherinehand.com.au.
And for our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.